your Nick's son, aren't you?
With twins. That's crazy, Nick's dude. Crazy. Son.
Twins, but he was born 3 years earlier. You know, sometimes twins, like, they're born a few little bit apart.
Yes.
You're Irish twins. You're Amish twins. You're 3 years
that
apart.
That many years apart. Is that like maybe like Polish twins or something? I don't know.
Hey, we got a book. Give us an intro here, Diana, please.
Well, okay. Yes. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Mm. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. The synthwave of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel the spirit of the fiends coming at you through the radios?
I do. Oh, yes.
You the Freedom Fiends. North Kakalaki, and now
I live
in
West Kakalaki.
All right.
That sounds about right.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
You and those orgies.
I know. I can't stop myself. It's turned into a Tourette's thing.
Yeah. What is? We're doing trust falls now? I don't know. Hang on. I got to go stop mining. Are you guys mining?
No,
I'll start up again right after the show.
Yes, me too. I had to stop. I had to edit my other podcast because I put it off all weekend because I said, hey, it's Labor Day coming up, so I don't actually have to put a show out on Monday. I can put it out on Tuesday, so I have an extra day, which meant I wasted Friday night and Saturday night. So tonight I had to scramble before the show and get that done. So
what? Huh? What did I miss? Yeah. we got good volumes here. Mike did a good job sound checking. Excellent. Us. I want to thank him.
Thank you for your service, Mike. Appreciate it.
So I do have to stop mining Bitcoin. Hang on a sec. You know, Bitcoin is kind of the
zombie of cryptocurrency.
It is, or the Schrodinger's cryptocurrency. It's both alive and dead. And I know that some people have said I shouldn't say it ever has a chance because it might not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm mining just to see what happens. And, you know, it's kind of fun. We're leading up as a, like, test mine coin, you know? Mm-hmm. You never know. You never know what baubles will be worth something in the future. And I'm not promising anything. I don't know anything. I can almost say
they'll be worth nothing.
Put it this way. I will buy all your BIPs right now for 25 cents per thousand. That's what they're worth. But there's no reason not to mine. It's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah,
you
guys it is fun.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of makes me feel part of the whole, you know, cryptocurrency, I don't know, thingy. I don't know.
Yeah.
kind of like that eulogy that Paul Gordon wrote for Bitcoin.
I haven't seen that.
Well, I heard it. I heard it on the show. You guys read. Somebody read it on the show. Lisa, I think.
Well,
maybe needs
an update now. It needs two of them because Bitcoin has come to life, died, come to life, died again. Someone's getting an echo. Someone's got turned on their feed. But yeah, so it's the Lazarus of coin. I would say the Phoenix of coin, but there's actually a horrible cryptocurrency called Phoenix coin. So I'm not going to compare it to that. But yeah, man, it's kind of weird how things work, isn't it?
Yes.
Nod. Wink,
tried
wink.
To kill it and it just wouldn't die.
Dog whistle. Yeah, it was kind of strange that we declared it dead. We took down all the seed nodes and 6 days, you know, it had been live for 8 days publicly. And then I tried after 6 days, I was like, oh, yeah, that cryptocurrency we used to have. I guess I still have the software here. And I opened it up, and I first thing I noticed was, like, the wallet synced after a couple of minutes. I was like, that's interesting. What's it syncing to? You know? And then I was like, I wonder if I can transact with myself. So I sent a Bitcoin from myself, from one wallet to another, and it came through. And I was like, okay, that's weird, but you know, it's probably just because it's cached my IP address. So on one of my computers, I can change my IP address by rebooting the modem on the DSL computer. So I rebooted that computer, showed myself that I had a different IP address I hadn't used with Bitcoin before, and then downloaded Bitcoin, fresh install, new wallet, and sent transactions to that from my old wallet on another computer, and it worked. And I was like, holy crap. This thing's still running somehow without the seed nodes. And
we buried it alive.
No, man. So then, I mean, this is a testament to the power of cryptocurrencies. So then I started mining, and I was mining. And I was like, that's really weird. And then I did the calculations of, like, what block height it should be at compared to what it was when we shut it off, and it was correct. And I'm like, holy crap, this thing is still alive. So wow. I declared it alive, said it was great, said it was wonderful, and people should start mining it again. And then Brian Gordon, who basically helped me invent it, told me, no, I think it should stay dead, Michael. I think you had a lot of integrity when you put up that notice that said, we're killing it now rather than letting it die a slow death like most cryptocurrencies. And God bless Brian. I love him. I really do. But he bowed out. He's like, I'm done. If you're going to, you know, I don't want my name. He didn't say he didn't want his name on it, but he's like, you know, he offered to help me restart it from a new code base, cloning Monero. And I'm like, I don't really want to do that. You know, I want to see what could happen with this. And he's right. Like, it's too broken. And it's still too broken right now, but I don't know. Who knows? Maybe. You know, put it this way. If I can't kill it, there might be someone out there who can fix it. So, you know, dog whistle. I'm mining Bipcoin. Not Bitcoin, yeah. But Bipcoin.
Bipcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. I mean, I guess the related
all
thing,
crypto all the time
until we talk about other things. But hey, right. I got a question. I was going to segue into the thing about. Well, let's just segue into it. Let's talk about the interview with Fluffy Pony, who is the creator of Monero.
Not and the Monero, creator. Not he was. He was,
yeah,
he was
right. Thank you.
He pointed that out multiple times. Yes. Because Mark. Yep. Mark made the mistake a couple. Was it eight?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Mark wasn't listening. He was told Fluffy's not the creator, and then he said, "As the creator," like 5 minutes later. And if you go to bipcoin.org, my service to the community today was I took the 1 hour. Interview of Fluffy Pony, Ricardo Spagnoletti, I think is his name, something like that. The cool dude from South Africa who's the head developer on Monero. Monero is the main coin, the biggest coin, most popular coin with the biggest, market cap. You know, like the value of the coin times the number of the coin, like the most, the whole ecosystem is worth the most, at least, of any crypto note, cryptocurrency. There's probably 10 of them. There are about 1,000 cryptocurrencies. Most are derived from Bitcoin, mm-hmm. not Bipcoin. But we're interested in the crypto note variety as well as the Bitcoin variety, but mainly only Bitcoin from that variety. I was interested in Namecoin for a long time, but I'm not anymore. It's got its own problems. But so Fluffy Pony, yeah. Ricardo from South Africa did a Skype interview that sounded pretty good. Yeah, it is on Free Talk Live today, and I edited it down. I basically was doing it to help Jeremy because he had to babysit his kids tonight and didn't have time to sit around and listen to it. I'm like, well, I'm listening to it while I'm doing it. I'll edit out the commercials, edit out the gaps, edit out the music, and normalize the sound and re-upload it for you. So I did that for Jeremy. But then
Justin,
I was like,
thank
not?
You. Thank you for your service.
And I was like, why not share that with everybody? So it's on the Bipcoin. And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me as a talk radio host.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. How an hour of talk radio is actually about 35 minutes of talking.
Right.
Yep, that's, I know. I think that's exactly, it was like 35:29 or something like that. It was cut down to.
Yep. And we do sort of that with the podcasts of our show. We take out all of the network and all of the ads, you know, the ones from us, mm-hmm. the ones from the network, and the ones from the stations. And, you know, that's like 25 minutes of stuff. Per show, we take that out and add back in about 5 minutes of stuff. We add in like, you know, 30 seconds to 90 seconds of ads for every 4 or 5 minutes we take out. And our ads sound good and they're funny. So
yeah,
this is true.
I basically do that. I used to do that by hand every night before Brian Gordon, co-creator of Bipcoin, but now has bowed out graciously. He invented this thing called Fiendbot 4000, which is the only people who have it are fiends. He's going to make a Fiendbot 3000 for the public. What do you mean?
I love Fiendbot. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It makes my job wonderfully easy.
Yeah. To make it so like really anybody with a pulse and a brain can edit a Fiends episode.
This idiot can do it. Anybody can. There you go.
Yes, if Jeremy...
Maybe I'll have to try my hat at it.
Jeremy, bad audio hangler, can make great-sounding themes episodes.
Yes.
You can, too, Diana.
Exactly.
Yeah. I should try it. You should try it sometime. Yeah.
Yep. So, that's what I got. So, let's talk a little bit about Monero and Spagnolani, Fluffy Pony. What do you think of his name? I like it.
Fluffy Pony.
That's really cute. Yeah. And he actually commented on one of the articles that I read, not the ones that you sent us to read, but the one on Cointelegraph. I didn't send it to y'all, but it's the five major reasons why Monero has spiked. Yeah. And some people are
There's the main reason is because it got it. Well, it's the best crypto note code wise, probably. It's got the most developers on it.
Probably.
But, allegedly. You know, let's look at Bitcoin in a few days. So, see where it might have morphed into on its own. So, it got picked up. Monero got picked up by a couple kind of Silk Road kind of sites like Darknet. Mm-hmm. You know, the stuff they always like use on cop shows to scare you, like, well, they're selling child porn and rocket propelled grenades to school children on the dark net.
They kind of used
it on Mr. Robot to scare you too. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
I hated that. I hated that because the guy running it, like they were kind of taking everything that had been said that was a lie about Silk Road and the creator and applied it to a caricature of him.
Exactly. Kind of. Yeah.
You were a big black dude. So we're going to talk about this when we get back on Freedom Things Barnes.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone proof.
Here we go. Camera. The breastfeeding man, woman on the cover.
Actually, it's chest feeding.
Yes, it was. That was because
I read the whole article.
I didn't even. Well, it was just stressed at the very beginning.
I can't hear you.
I just thought it was interesting.
Okay, so we're talking about cryptocurrencies, and you know, I was kind of surprised to find out that Monero doesn't have a GUI wallet. I actually knew that. Well, they kind of do, but I couldn't get it to work, and I'm pretty smart. So Bitcoin has that. Yeah. All right. I mean, yeah, but he also pointed out that, like, the reason they don't have one yet is because they started 2 years ago, and they immediately got attacked by a very sophisticated attack of someone who understood their code and used it against them, which is an interesting thing to happen. So,
yeah, the other thing I thought was really interesting is the fact that it's not finite the way Bitcoin is.
I didn't know that because
CryptoNote code
is like the you know, the default, like, here's CryptoNote as it was thrown into the world is finite. And we copied that code. We actually copied Bitcoin, which copied CryptoNote. And Bitcoin has, I won't declare a coin dead, really, because that's what they call FUD. Uncertainty and doubt. But I will, I think that Bitcoin has a really bad cold. Let's put it that way, because we actually went in the boogie woogie flu. We actually went on the developer IRC channel to ask them a question, and there was no one there. And we waited there for 4 days, and they never showed up. And the only person
people are still using IRC.
Yeah. Oh, it's what's old is new again, man. IRC is big with developer
I don't know
teams.
What that is.
It's that, like, I think AOL used to have a version of it. Was it. Before, it's like instant it was before, chat.
Yeah, it was a messenger before. I was using it before, long before AOL. It's,
yeah.
Wow.
Well, before AOL, AOL started before the web.
Yeah, that I know.
When were you using it? Yeah, I did.
I know people that still have AOL addresses. It's pretty funny.
AOL absolutely started before the web. It started in 1983. For internet only access before the web existed. Web started in 93. So did you use IRC before 83?
Oh no, I didn't use it before 83.
Okay, when did you use it?
He started using AOL.
Before AOL started, being used for the web.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't realize. Okay. I started speaking before you, as you were speaking. So I didn't get to hear you say that it was that it was using it before.
Okay, web service. Because IRC happened. I mean, in the usable form we know it today, it was in summer of '93.
Yeah.
But I mean, it goes back to like something from 1988. But you know, that was on mainframe computers. But yeah, '93, like hours before the web, like a couple months before the web, basically. The web started in late 93, I think. So anyway, I digress. And we're talking about blockchains, which are kind of like, I've actually heard them called web 3.0 because, you know, web 2.0 was basically started around, late 90s or early around 2000. It was basically when it became easy for people who didn't know web design to use the web. You know, like what was before MySpace? Friendster. Remember Friendster?
Friendster, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if
I've never used it.
Yeah. Actually met a girl I had sex with on Friendster. But yeah. And so that was web 2.0 was like before that, like when I started using the web in 96, you had to know web design. You had to learn web design to have a website. Web 2.0 was, you know, you just log on and make an account and upload an avatar and write something about yourself, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there have been a lot of people who said this is web 3.0, but really I think Bitcoin and blockchain technology is web 3.0 because it's really the first time that certain things were able to be done, which basically was like consensus, you know, of a distributed encrypted database, which is what a blockchain is, to where people can, the main thing it does that like could never be done before is like eliminate the double spending problem. You know, like Jeremy spends a coin on the chain and on the same chain, Diana can't spend the same coin because it's already been spent. That's what the blockchain did. But there are some problems with Bitcoin and crypto technology is an attempt to solve them. So I would call it like web 3.2 or something. So yeah, we're talking about Fluffy Pony and Monero. And I didn't know that it didn't have a finite limit.
Yeah, I thought I got that information from you originally.
No, I said that it didn't. The things I said were the same things that Bitcoin has that it has, which one is it doesn't have the halving of blockchain size the way that Bitcoin does every couple years.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Yeah. So,
talk about Mr. Robot on the break some more.
4 minutes confounding Jeremy with a bunch of spoilers that we didn't alert him about. We just spent 4 minutes, Diana and I, talking about Mr. Robot and what really happened in this season.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Here's what really happened.
If I get around to watching it, it'll probably be like 2 years from now. I'll forget all about this conversation.
You know, I was going to say,
that's obvious.
I said before the show, this is kind of funny. Now I like you, Jeremy. But I said before the show.
Well, that seals the deal right
there. The other day I listened. Good radio. The other day I listened to, speaking of good radio, the other day I listened to an episode from a few days ago with Angela and Jeremy where I basically yelled at Jeremy twice in the show and like stuff you should never say on the air, like pointing out when he's doing bad radio and then like saying something mean about his character or something, like, you know, stuff that should be said privately. And I was listening to it, like, it was shocking to me. Because I was listening to it thinking, like, how would, you know, usual Fiend fans are like, oh, there goes Michael again. But people, if someone, if that was the first episode someone heard, they would have been like, God, I like this show, but I hope they never have that guest on again. He was horrible.
Guest meaning you.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't know, really. If you
the cantankerous old man, you know, always berating
in the
people.
Middle of the show, yeah, yeah. Or like maybe he's a sidekick, like, you know,
the curmudgeon.
Some of those people that, you know. Anyway, what were you saying?
Thanks. That's how used to what I am. I only remember the one instance. I don't even remember the second one. You keep saying two twice. I'm like, what was the second one? I don't even remember.
You're just so used to it, Jeremy.
You know, you went to your therapist. You showed him on the doll where I touched you on the air twice, and then you forgot one of them. Like Mr. Robot. So here's what happened on Mr. Robot this season. Diana and I cracked the code. First of all, I want to say, I think that the writers missed a really brilliant opportunity by not having the way that our hero, what's his name? Elliot. I never remember heroes' names of people I feel like I've remembered.
I noticed you kept saying our hero.
Yeah. Well, really, it should be our unreliable narrator, because he is the archetype called an unreliable narrator, which is a... The unnamed protagonist in Fight Club is a perfect example.
Like someone who
you don't know if what you're seeing for most of the show is real or in their head or a combination.
Yeah, it definitely has that feel of Fight Club for sure. The show does.
Oh, it's so Fight Club. I mean, I almost started making a list and just gave up. I mean, even to the point where, like, Mr. Robot holds a gun to Elliot's head, and then they say something about, like, well, it's not really, it's me holding the gun to my head. I mean, that's the last scene in Fight Club, but he actually shoots himself in Fight Club. But so here's what we think happened in this season of Mr. Robot, and then we'll get back to Fluffy Pony. Boy, if you're just tuning in, you're like, what are these people talking about? Robots, Mr. Robot, Fluffy Pony.
We're the show about tangents.
Yeah. We're not a show about nothing, though. We're not Seinfeld. We're better than that. Okay, so we think that the whole season, Elliot has been, well, Mr. Robot's his imaginary friend, who's his dead dad. Mm-hmm. Unlike the kind of like the imaginary friend who's really just his alter ego in Fight Club, but you know, the cooler, more badass like creation that he has. So, but this one's actually based on a real person, his dead dad. So,
right.
And I really loved that fake sitcom at the beginning of the season.
I know, that was awesome. Sitcom
with like the actual USA Network 80s logo and like an Alf reference. I had to check and see that Jerry Stahl wasn't writing for that show now, because the Alf reference, because Jerry Stahl wrote for that, and because Jerry Stahl is like kind of the it guy for weird writing, like CSI, the original.
So was he? No, he wasn't, but
it was so Jerry Stahl, and it had an Alf reference, you know, which is
a couple
weird.
Alf references. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just an homage to him then.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I think it's an homage to 80s TV, but
for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, that's kind of quick shorthand to really, really put you in the early 80s on TV is Alf showing up in your nightmare. So
running over a cop.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. So here's what we think happened. We think that Elliot got arrested finally for hacking his shrink's boyfriend and stealing the boyfriend's
dog. Yeah.
And went to jail for like a couple years, but only served 9 months. He was good behavior.
No, 86 days. He was only in for 86 days. Well, yeah, he was supposed to be in for 18 months, I think.
I think the warden helped him get out, who actually turned out to be the guy running the post Silk Road dark site that, you know, sells not just drugs, but rocket propelled grenades and kidnapped sex slave teenage girls.
Right.
Yeah. So we think that he was really in prison for hacking. The warden, who was Ray, the big black guy, and the other warden, who was his henchman in all the hallucinations of Elliot, thinking he was hacking for Ray on the outside, that it really was, you know, Elliot working for Ray, but in the prison.
Yeah.
And the whole time, Ray didn't want to believe he was in prison. So he made up this fantasy that he was staying at his mother's house.
You mean Elliot? Yeah, Elliot.
Elliot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our hero. Our right. damaged goods hero.
Yeah.
And but really, the one thing that the writers really missed out on was when they showed that Ray was on a dialysis machine, I really thought that at some point Elliot was going to hack his dialysis machine and kill him or, you know, injure him to where Elliot could get out. Because that's a thing, like the fear of people hacking medical devices.
Right.
That's like, it's an actual fear. Like they have symposiums on it for software and hardware designers and medical professionals. And, and there was like actually a Law and Order episode like 15 years ago where people were being killed by someone doing that. And, you know, why did they, there's a saying in movies, in screenwriting, don't show a gun in act one if you're not going to use it by act three. And I say, don't show a dialysis machine if you're not going to hack it by the end of the season.
That's a really good point. I mean, considering, as I was thinking for just a minute there that, you know, that perhaps he just didn't really have time or something to do it while he was in there, but he had time to hack the FBI.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess he could have hacked the dialysis machine.
So anyway, back to Fluffy Pony and Monero. I liked what
Whiplash.
Fluffy Pony,
not a furry's reference.
I like what Fluffy Pony said. When, like, basically, Ian asked him, and Ian and Fluffy Pony are going to deny this is what happened. But this is what happened. Go.
This
listen
is getting
to
worse
because there were some dog whistles. So Ian basically said, so, you know, what are you going to do when people start buying crack, you know, for children on the dark net with Monero? And Fluffy Pony basically said, that's none of my business, man.
And I always picture kind of, and anytime anybody says that, I picture the Kermit the Frog meme where he's drinking tea. But that's none of my business.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of famous because Ian, when asked about something that, you know, the FBI ended up trying to get him for that he didn't do, that has some relation to something in his life that's real, but not as horrific as people make it out to be. But that's none of my business. He said, when other people do that, that's none of my business. That was his answer. And it's kind of become, even if Ian doesn't know this, it's become a meme in Liberty. Like James Babb, God bless his smart soul, before I fired him for being mean to me on the Freedom Fiends, he used to say that all the time about everything. And it was a joke reference to Ian, but also in support of, not in support of Ian and, you know, his predilections, but in support of Ian got a raw deal from Pork Fest and the Free State Project.
Oh, yeah, the Free State Project. Yeah,
I
the Free State
every Project. Everyone agrees with that, you know?
Yeah.
I do. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep.
What?
I'm just slapping the back of my neck with a. It's kind of like giving myself a back rub, but like a BDSM back rub. I'm a top, not a bottom, but, or I'm actually a dom, not a sub, but I don't know. I just happen to have this slapping stick and it feels good.
Never a switch way. Ever.
Oh, never. How about this? Okay. This is like going into other dimensions here and you really have to know the nomenclature to get it. And one you might, and one you might not, but sometimes a switch with top to bottom, but never a switch with dom and sub. Always a dom, but sometimes from topping from the bottom, but not in a pushy bottom
that
way.
That makes
but
sense.
In a, like, I'm in control way.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. See, I can sound like Jeremy. Oh, sexy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's real sexy.
Okay. So, well, that's none of my business.
Keep
Let's
trying.
See, we covered Monero. I think
one
we covered
day.
Monero.
One day.
We've only got one very white fiend.
You got any more? We only got one white fiend? Is that what you said?
I said we've only got one very white fiend.
Oh, I heard one white fiend. I'm like, well, I know I'm part black, but not much.
Okay, so tomorrow I'm definitely going to do my 1, 2, 3 test. What is it? Why is it? Is it
what?
1, 2, 3 and me? I keep calling it my 1, 2, 3.
Oh, 23 and me.
Me. What? Where do I get 1, 2, 3 from?
I think
it's
black,
know.
Not
anyway.
Jewish.
So 23andMe, I still haven't done it. I've had the stupid test for like 2 years now, and I'm going to do it tomorrow, and I'm going to mail it in on Tuesday. Going to do it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
find out what other ethnicities I am. I'm pretty sure I'm a Roma gypsy, but got some of that in there.
Isn't that what the guy that made Cell 411 is? Isn't he some kind of Transylvanian?
He's Romanian.
From Romania. I know that.
He's Romanian.
I don't know. You know, like us Americans, ugly Americans will make jokes like, oh, isn't he Transylvanian? But, you know, that could be like, I don't know. That could be like saying to a Chinese person, oh, aren't you Japanese? Or, you know,
well,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Transylvania is in Romania.
I know. But who knows what, you know, what it means to ask someone jokingly from Romania if they're Transylvanian. Hey, I just sent you something to read. It's mind-blowing. I might have you read it in the next segment because let's save it. But pull it up, Diana. But don't read it yet. I want you to read it and react to it on air. All right?
Okay, cool. All right.
All right. So, Monero, anything else about Monero in the next minute?
Yeah, I'm still kind of wondering about the implications of it being infinite or sort of infinite, I suppose.
I think that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, he talked about it being disinflationary because of that, but I'm not quite sure what that would mean in the crypto world.
Yeah, I was confused by that too.
Because, yeah, although like,
isn't that the Federal Reserve? I mean, like, how is that any different?
Yeah, it might just be though that those guys understand economics as well as they understand cryptography and computer science, which is pretty a lot.
Pretty a lot.
Whole bunches.
That's the bottom line.
A crap
of Monero.
Ton.
I gotta say, of Monero. Monero is a crap ton of a good. They got bunches of scientists running it, and it's now used on the dark web, and that's none of my business.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
So yeah.
Meow. 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 Meow.
So somebody wrote me and thanked me for turning him on to jazz. He said that the other day he really enjoyed the jazz background on the Fiends.
Oh wow.
And he said it definitely wasn't the modern elevator music crap they play on college radio that I associate with the word jazz. That's probably why I never really looked into the genre before now. So he's checking it out. Man, the Fiends are just helping people all over the world.
That's awesome. Yeah. Even with their music choices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tasing them with liberty and Jim, turning them on to jazz.
Jim Jesus just said that he now takes Monero for orders on everything he sells. Cool.
Wow.
And
wow.
Maybe I should start doing that. Now, I was into Monero before it was cool. I do want to point out that like everyone's talking about Monero now. The price has gone from $1.50 a coin to $12 a coin like overnight when Alphabay picked it up. And everyone's trying to mine it now. I was actually mining it a month ago. And our CryptoNote-based coin, Bipcoin, came out the day before that dark market announcement. So we are not jumping on the bandwagon.
Right.
And I've turned a lot of people onto it, and a lot of people who like mined Bipcoin are now mining Monero. So
yeah, I'm definitely considering it. Can you mine both at the same time?
Not on the same computer, not easily. I wouldn't. You can do it on two different computers. There are things that have what's called mixed mining. There are like Namecoin and Bitcoin you could mine at the same time, but I don't know that you can mine both. I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't tried it. But good question. So have you guys seen Narcos, the TV show on Netflix?
You know, I watched, I think, the first episode.
Oh,
and,
it's great.
Great. Yeah, I don't know.
And yeah, I'm in the second to last episode of the second season.
Oh, wow.
And spoiler alert, but there is a scene that is so Shakespearean. If you're watching it, it's the one where Pablo Escobar is talking to his dad while covered in blood. And his dad is denouncing him and saying, I'm not proud of you, son. It's like something out of the Bible or Shakespeare. So check it out. I did want to mention, I was looking for it and I found it. There is one actor in Narcos who was in El Breaking Bado, that Colombian Breaking Bad takeoff or like It was Breaking Bad, done in Spanish by Colombian actors. I called it El Breaking Bado, and Hugo, who's from Mexico, thought that was hilarious. And now all his Spanish-speaking friends in Mexico call it that as a joke. Like, I think making fun of the stupid gringos, but it's pretty funny.
I think it was actually called something like, it was
Metastases.
Like metastases, yes, exactly. Yeah,
because it's about a guy with cancer. So would you please read this incredibly bizarre letter? Now, I get a lot of letters, a lot of people offering things or demanding things or threatening things or, in this case, telling me I should do something, that Derek Slopey, who made Fiend Phone, and I should do something. And this guy sent it to Derek's email address, which is still good, and my old email address, which probably bounced, because I change my email address every couple of years and don't tell anyone except my friends. To like, you know, so opportunities never find me, but along with idiots never find me. But Derek forwarded this to me. He said, well, this happened, and sent it to me. Go ahead and read this, and it gets weirder as it goes, please.
Okay, so the subject line is the greatest challenge of anarchists, and I couldn't help it point but note that challenge was misspelled.
It's in English as a second language, guy, so don't, I never hold that against people.
Yeah,
because I can't write any kind of letter in any language that's not English.
Okay.
I can ask where the bathroom is in German and say, will you sleep with me? That's it.
Okay,
go ahead.
All right,
and where do I plug in my amplifier? Which is those three things. Where's the bathroom? Will you sleep with me? And where do I plug in my amplifier? All you need to know to tour Europe is those three things in German. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so dear Michael and Derek, a Corbett Report interview about .bit led me to your websites. I am looking for anarchy officer, in quotes, experts like you, and hope to find that...
To interject, that is my that's my job description on the Fiend Phone site, Chief Anarchy Officer. Jeff Berwick stole that the next day after I went on his show. And, you know, there's no real stealing of, like, intellectual property, but there is a joke thief, and he's a joke thief. There are joke thieves, and he's a joke thief. Because basically, if you're involved in something like creating things that are clever, if you steal someone else's clever thing and call it your own, you're not really doing well in the job of creating things that are clever. All right, so we're gonna start this letter over when we get back from this trip to the market.
Sounds good.
I'm the Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Worms.
Worms. Yo, worms. Worms.
Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from inside your mind along the blockchain of the dark web, and that's none of my business. I will say that. And just more cowbell, man. Can you buy more cowbell on the dark net? I need more cowbell because I got a fever.
And the only description is more cowbell.
More cowbell.
My daughter,
hey, Jeremy.
It does a perfect job imitating Christopher Walken. Like, perfect.
Yeah.
Like, completely on point. It's so funny.
Yeah. And God, who does he say he is? It's, I don't know. yeah. So, Jeremy.
Yes, Michael.
I just saw your neighbors on TV, and I was very disappointed with them.
I usually am too.
What?
But why this time?
Oh, I gotta say, okay. So, who
are your neighbors
in that more cowbell thing on TV, where on Saturday Night Live, where Christopher Walken
Blue Oyster Cult
is pretending to be producing Blue Oyster Cult and telling them they need more cowbell and Don't Fear the Reaper, which is their arguably greatest song. Although I was a fan before that. My brother bought me for Christmas their first record. I think it was their first record. The one that had like the black and white drawing of the like alien landscape with their weird heavy metal alchemic symbol on the horizon. But Sandy Pearlman like discovered them and was their producer and helped make them big and was always with them. Now, Sandy Pearlman had heard about my band Bomb when we were playing clubs before we were signed and really wanted to like check us out. Like we showed up at this club called the Chatterbox, which holds like 99 people, but that's the fire limit. But they usually would cram twice that into there in there. And like, you know, the board op, like the guy running the sound sold speed. Like it was that kind of club. It was a kind of a bikerish club. And, we showed up for sound check, and the lady who ran the place was really excited. And she said, Sandy Pearlman called and he wants to be on the guest list. I'm putting him on the guest list for you guys. And my drummer was like, you know, we knew who he was and we were like,
yeah,
he can pay. My drummer says he can pay.
Nice.
Like that's why Bomb wasn't big, was that kind of attitude. Seriously, man. Like, oh, this big record producer wants to come see your band in this little club. He can pay, you know. So Sandy Pearlman is who's pretending to be Walken.
Christopher Walken.
But he actually calls himself Bruce Dickinson, who's the singer in Iron Maiden. I don't know why they made that mistake in the writing room, but yeah. So I during the break.
No, I thought he was supposed. No, I think he was supposed to be playing Bruce Dickinson. I think that was the point. He wasn't supposed to be.
But Bruce Dickinson had nothing to do with producing Blue Oyster Cult or that song. It was Sandy Pearlman. It was probably Sandy Pearlman in the room saying more cowbell, if that was ever said. But
I don't know.
So also Blue Oyster Cult, my other Blue Oyster Cult story is when they were trying to make their big comeback after they'd blown through $20 million of cocaine from Don't Fear the Reaper, and they made that record that that had like the picture of the Cliff House burning in 1908 in San Francisco on the cover. And it was, I think I remember hearing that it took so long to make and cost so much money that the record company sued them like for what it cost. And it didn't sell any, you know, it might have gotten gold, but that's it. Like, you know, 500,000 records or whatever. But it didn't do that well. So they were in the same studio that my band Bomb was in when Bomb was recording our first and possibly greatest record. Blue Oyster Cult was recording what should have been their last and was their worst record at the same time in the same building. And they were actually like doing vocal overdubs with the door open. They were upstairs, we were downstairs.
Wow.
But we took a break. I could hear them like, oh, try it again. And at one point, I went up to Buck Dharma, my childhood hero. You know, like I was like, who is that up there? And the, you know, our engineer, Dave Bach, who people see me talk to Dave Bach on Facebook all the time. B-A-C-H. Dave Bach. He makes Bach microphones now, but he was the engineer on the first Bomb record. And great guy. And people see me talking to him on Facebook all the time. Say hi to him. Say you heard this story if you see him on Facebook.
Okay.
So he's like, yeah, it's Blue Oyster Cult up there. I'm like, wow, they're my heroes, man. And I went up and I was like, I didn't go up there for the first couple days, but the third day we're in the studio when we had recorded our whole record and we're mixing it. The third day it was done. And I went up to Buck Dharma and shook his hand, said, hey, I'm Michael Dean. I'm in a band called Bomb. We're recording downstairs. And I said, I really like you guys, man. You're one of my favorite bands. And it was true. And he's like, thanks, man. Thanks. And I said, but I've been here 3 days making a great record. And during that 3 days, I've heard you work on the same line of lyrics. And you still didn't get it. And it doesn't sound very good, man. It's not what I'm used to from you guys. And he looked crestfallen, like
I
punched him in the stomach. And I was nobody. But he was probably out of his mind on coke, I'm imagining. I later apologized to him, but it's a good story. So during the break, I turn on the TV.
You destroyed the man? Yeah, great story.
Yeah. I'm the reason the record sucked.
You were the downfall of Blue Oyster Cult.
The record company should have sued me for my, you know, my messenger bike and my $8 in my bank account. So I turn on the TV during the break, between the hour break, and there's this horrible, wimpy band on there. And it's a bunch of old men, and they have, like, great equipment. And I'm like, who is this? And it's just the worst song I've ever heard. It's wimpy. It's got no butt. It's not even a good ballad. It just sucks. And I'm like, who is this? And I flip on the channel information and it's Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh.
Oh my goodness.
And so that's your neighbors. They're from Long Island. So I saw your neighbors on TV. Yeah. Yeah, man.
So you want me to finish this here letter?
Yeah. I want you to start.
Start it over.
I have an announcement.
I should probably explain the letter.
No, Rawls, John Wesley Rawls. I said on a previous episode that I thought he was a racist. He's absolutely not a racist. Several of his fans wrote me and said, I listen to the guy all the time. He's not a racist. He wouldn't even like recommend some book written on prepping, which is his topic, because the guy who wrote it once made some racist remark years ago. So, Wesley Rawls is absolutely not a racist. I apologize to him, his family, his friends, his fans, and the entire Western nation's redoubt of, you know, bringing people to that area. And speaking of really cool prepper type people, Boston Tea Party has a new book out called Boston Tea Party's Modules for Manhood, Volume 2, which Nick Hazelton and I reviewed and interviewed Boston at the same time when Nick was like 14. It was one of the first things he did on the show. And it's a book for people like Nick. Like, he is the center of the target audience. And I've invited Boston to do another interview after Nick reads the book, and he's really excited. I think Boston will do it. I don't know why he wouldn't. So that'll happen. So we got this letter from some guy we don't know who said, and Derek sent it to me and said, well, this happened, which is about sums it up. So please go ahead and start it from the top. I won't interrupt this time much.
All right. So the subject line is the greatest challenge of anarchists, and says, Dear Michael and Derek, a Corbett Report interview about .bit led me to your websites. I'm looking for, quote, anarchy officer, unquote, experts like you in hope to find the solution to one of the greatest problems of mankind. This problem is the basic ignorance of the general public about true information. If everybody, or at least a significant percentage of population, could have access to important true information, then the present oppressive systems of control could be broken. The major problem is not so much the lack of true information sources, but the efficient spreading of such information to the masses. This problem needs to be solved in such a way that the controllers should not be able to stop the spreading of very important true information that can liberate everyone from tyranny.
Okay, and this guy didn't do his research, because he's basically saying, can you please invent Made Safe and Steam for me? Like, what he's describing exists. Made Safe is yet to prove itself. Steam, I think, is a great idea done wrong, but it's what he's asking for. So go ahead.
Okay, and one of such very important true information is about the existence and know-how of free energy technology, which has been suppressed since the times of Tesla.
In other words, perpetual motion, and this guy's a loon, but go on.
The success of such suppression is not so much due to the lack of inventions, but rather due to the inadequacy of publishing and spreading the true science and know-how so that the average technically minded people could build and use such devices at home. If you would get access to such groundbreaking information, how would you spread it to as many people as possible? Preferably first to those with necessary skills to implement them in practice, in such a way that the controllers should not be able to stop the spreading of the information. This needs to be a fail-safe strategy, because there might be only one opportunity to get this right. If you're interested in this subject, then please respond to this message from your SIGINT email account. Not sure exactly what that says. To keep it as private as possible, please don't talk about this to Jews and their servants, not even if they are your friends and you trust them.
I just had to have my church friend read this read this private message that shouldn't be told to the Jews. I just had to have my Jewish friend read on the radio. What's his name? So tell me his name.
His name is Zoltan Losonk.
Zoltan.
Yeah. Zoltan.
And when you search that, you get like a bunch of Eastern European blues music on YouTube, and then a bunch of like, and it's all him, and then a bunch of like really, you know, he's kind of like the, oh, let's see, if the current Blue Oyster Cult weren't famous and lived in Bucharest, they'd be this guy and his band.
Okay, so wasn't Zoltan also the fortune teller machine in Big? Wasn't that
probably,
also Zoltan?
Probably, yeah. It might be a real name, though, but... And then the other thing you find when you search this guy is a bunch of stuff on the internet that no one has censored yet about his plans for building a perpetual motion or free energy machine. So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, what he's asking is, he's saying, like, we must keep the Jews from censoring this. But it's like, this stuff's all over the internet, and no one's really done it yet. I don't think it's possible. I think it defies... guys. That's so funny, man. That's hilarious.
Please. Man. You could kind of tell.
Jews from, or their agents.
They're servants. Jews and their servants.
Sorry, yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
I didn't see that coming. You were like, yeah, what were you thinking, Jeremy? Kind of like, yeah, this is kind of, you know, maybe kind of naive, but it makes sense.
Well, no, it wasn't even naive. I immediately thought he was doing like a sales pitch for something, but then like that, I just so did not see that last line.
Don't tell this to Jews or their servants. And I just did that. Although, you know, I'm not your servant, but, you know, and I was hitting myself with that stick, but I was dominating myself, so it's okay.
Well, I'm only part Jew anyway, so.
Only part Jew.
I won't talk about this to the part of me that's Jewish.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Helen Hunt. Sorry.
You're talking about we got cows?
We've got cows.
Truly, I gotta go. We got cows.
They're not airborne yet, but it is thundering here. I'm not in the... I was trying to think of the name of Tornado Alley during the break, and I said, yeah, we're just out of the funnel tunnel. My wife said,
that's pretty good, though. It's a good one.
Yeah, we're a little far west for that, Caspers. But Cheyenne, which is south of us, but more importantly for this, east of us, is at the edge of the funnel tunnel. They get tornadoes in Cheyenne.
Oh, yeah, we do too. Like where I live, I mean, there have been tornado warnings this summer. I live in Colorado Springs, but it's just like, I mean, we're right next to the prairie. Like the prairie is like right there, and then there's the mountains. And
The prairie and mountains I am between prairie and mountains. I can see the beginning of the Rockies out my kitchen window if I bend my head down.
Yeah, no, the Rockies are right in my face.
Yeah.
In your face.
They're in my face.
Yeah, they're not really in your face like the Alps, though. I remember touring with my band Bomb. Bingo. If you're playing the home bingo.
You already cleared that in the first. Bomb.
Well, I got to talk about the woman I made sweet, sweet love with in Innsbruck, Austria. And I woke up. I was really drunk when I went home with her. And I woke up. And I looked out the window, and it was like a movie where they're exaggerating a mountain, because it was like I looked out her window, and I had to like bend my head way down below the window to see the top of the mountain that started about a half mile from her house. I mean, it was mind blowing. It made the Rockies look like, you know, bumps.
Well, there's snow on Pike's Peak now.
Nice.
Yeah,
there's some places in Colorado that almost always have snow, aren't there?
Yeah. Well, yeah, like in the, I guess, I'm trying to think of the Western Slope. I think there's more mountains there that keep snow year-round. But yeah, I was just kind of surprised. I was coming home from Michigan and saw Pike's Peak on my way in, and I'm like, whoa, snow. And it was still August.
Yeah. Fiend Sight's down for a minute, but it's just a reboot, people, if you're looking at it. Or, you know... If our host is listening, we like to get. I don't want to sit here and email someone during the show. I'll just say, "Hey, host, it's down, but I trust it'll be up soon." Okay, so I was going to tell the story about streaking at my college. Did you guys ever streak?
I never did. I considered it.
Yeah, Jeremy, you know what that is?
Yes, I know what it is.
Do people today know that term?
I think they do.
Streaking was big.
Yeah. It still happens.
It was basically like getting naked and running in public. And it was popular on college campuses in the early 70s. I did it on my community college campus in the early 80s. And here's what it was. Okay. I got a ride from a friend of mine who stayed the night at our house after he fell asleep at a party, crashed out, passed out. He gave me a ride to college the next morning. It was like a 6-minute walk, but it was like a 1-minute drive. So he drove me, parked in the, and he went to school there too. So he parked in, we parked in the parking lot. Now, on the way there, we had a discussion of, you can take your shirt off. Why can't you take your pants off? It was just this basic, like, you know, young person freedom talk without really knowing about liberty. I do remember, too, like that year, like I showed up tripping with really long hair and looking like a hippie, tripping on the first day of school. Didn't go to any classes. Went to orientation, which I call disorientation. In the student lobby, the Libertarian Party had a card table and was handing out pamphlets. They looked at me and they said, hey, do you want to legalize marijuana? I mean, they, you know, if it was a guy in a suit, they probably said, hey, do you want to pay less taxes?
Know your demographic.
Yeah, know your demographic.
Right.
And, you know, I did want to legalize marijuana, but they reminded me of preachers. Like, hey,
Super square. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't, that was the first time I heard the word libertarian, and I dismissed it for about 10 more years because of that. But I was pretty much a libertarian anyway. Because
they were like
weeks
Mormons
later,
or something. Right?
Yeah. A couple weeks later, I'm naked walking across the campus in broad daylight. And, you know, I just took my clothes off in his van because we'd had this conversation. I'm like, I'm doing it. Let's do it. He's like, I'm not doing it. And I'm like, I'll do it. And I did it. And I carried my clothes, you know, 200 yards to the student union, walked in the bathroom, put my clothes back on. Next day, this really cute girl I'd never even noticed, nerdy girl, came up to me and said, you know, I really have a lot of respect for you. You really seem to like be your own man and you seem to like make your own path. But yesterday you just went too far with what you did. So I guess I was free and she liked that, but I was too free, you know? So
yeah.
She was like, she's probably in the Libertarian Party now.
You had too long of a leash.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my streaking story. So Jay, let me ask you guys this. When I was a kid, like when I was smoking pot in like 1975,
well, how am I supposed to know about when you were smoking pot? As a kid? Come on now.
Let me ask you guys, when you guys were kids, you're a little younger than me. When you were kids, did people say, is that guy cool to mean, does he smoke pot?
I think so, yeah.
That's what I
didn't
mean.
Like, is so-and-so cool? Yeah.
It didn't mean, well, is he not a narc? It meant...
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Someone I don't know just sent me a snippy comment. I get these all the time. Someone sent me a picture of Stefan Molyneux looking worried with the phrase evidence for God.
I saw that.
And then he wrote, ha, ha, ha. I think what this is, I don't know, but I think what it is, I have a hard time remembering what I said today on the show, let alone months ago. But months ago, and shows replay on our 24/7 stream. Maybe he heard an old show today and thought it was live. But so I said on a show at some point about something bad happening to Stefan Molyneux, and maybe that's proof that there is a God. It wasn't that he had cancer. I'm not that callous, but maybe it was that he lived. No, that didn't make it. Anyway, there was something bad happened to him, and I said, maybe that's proof there's God. And I was making a joke, because he's an atheist. I'm a deist, which means I think there's a God, but I don't think that God could have any control over me or Stefan Molyneux. So it's as if we're kind of the Libertarian Party. We're kind of like the middle of the roadists between the atheist and the theists. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So I want to talk about J. Neil Schulman. I get him mixed up with L. Neil Smith, who's another cranky libertarian who's been making libertarian media since I was, you know, at community college laughing at the Libertarian Party. And these guys were in the Libertarian Party back then. Like, that's where everyone started and then became more and more minarchist too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think both these guys are kind of minarchist-y still. And
maybe there's something about the name Neil that just...
I don't know. Both kind of copyright guys too. Well,
boo.
So Jim Jesus hipped me to this, and he's going to be mad, and he's listening. He's going to be mad that I'm talking about tonight, but but he can talk about it tomorrow night, and tomorrow night's going to be another stellar lineup. It's going to be a full squirm of worms. It's going to be Lisa Dalasho, Angela Keaton, Jim Jesus, and Steve Miller. Like, nothing serious is going to get said with that.
Right.
Even though they're all capable of it. And
yeah.
Here's the other thing. Nothing good is going to get said about J. Neil Schulman, because all of those people, especially Jim and Angela, love to laugh at libertarian, like, you know, bigwigs.
Who think they're special snowflakes.
Libertarians. And especially since this guy, J. Neil Schulman, had a pod beef with Jim Jesus and I and thinks Jim Jesus and I are the same person. So this is going to prove to him that we're not, because I'm going to say nice things about him. And then tomorrow night, I'm assuming Jim is not. And I don't know if I can be on tomorrow because Fiend Phone's great, but five people on Fiend
Beyond
Phone doesn't
a squirm,
work.
It's Beyond questionable. A squirm,
especially when one of them has like third world internet, like Steve Miller in Kensington. Kensington. Although I think it might be his computer, because Nick used to have really bad problems with falling out on Fiend Phone, and I thought it was his rural Oregonian internets. And then he got a new computer, and we did a show the other day, and he didn't fall out once. So I think it's Steve's computer, Kensington computer, not his Kensington internet. So everyone should chip
in. The one
in
he picked up off the street corner?
Steve, a computer. The one he cobbled together out of Fiend the Homeless MP3 players and a broken radio, and it got struck by lightning, and now it's sort of a computer. Can I run Fiend Phone on Bitcoin? So the answer is no. So can you read this thing from J. Neil Schulman that he wrote that I'm going to have sympathy for and Jim's going to make fun of?
Yeah. Okay. So it's called, and it's on his blog site, agorist.com, jneilschulman.agorist.com. And
that's how long entitled, he's been a libertarian. He got the domain name agorist.com.
Agorist.com.
That's pretty cool. All right.
Yeah, that is cool. Okay. So that's one good thing. Check. Why I'm screwed is the title of it.
Okay. The reason he doesn't like us, let me interject real quick.
Okay.
In Michael Dean fashion, interrupt you after I tell you to read something. He's supposed to be a great writer. And this is like a well-written, this is good writing, but he writes novels. And they're like...
And Alongside Night, he wrote that, yeah.
Yeah, which I've heard, Jim and I have heard, is a great book.
The book is good, yeah.
He made a movie of it, and it's laughable. And Jim did a couple videos making fun of that and said in all three of the videos, you know, I hear the book's great, haven't read it, I'm only talking about the movie. So here's his thing, and I'm going to jump in and interrupt some of it and say why it's different in my life when I do the same things.
Okay. All right. So he says, I recently posted on Facebook, then as a web page, a request for voluntary compensation. Donation implies I've done nothing to merit it. For the content,
that's a problem right there. Yeah. Like pounding my chest. Donation implies I ask for donations all the time, and I call them that.
Yeah.
All right. Go on.
Yeah. So he's asking for voluntary compensation for the content I've given away free for many years.
Yeah. And his friend.
No, I was laughing.
I'm almost ready. Just one more minute, baby. Okay.
Whoa.
That's Blue Oyster Cult in the studio trying to do a line of lyrics. Okay. So, So his mutual friend, of ours who worked with L. Neil Smith, mm-hmm. L. Neil Smith. You guys know his stuff?
No, I don't.
Familiar.
Yeah.
You keep saying
I might be. I just might not know the name.
I want to thank L. Ron Hubbard. So I
Steve Miller told me he heard on an anti-Scientology podcast that the Church of Scientology uses my book, $30 Film School, for making their videos. I don't know if he's kidding or not. But
oh my goodness!
I want to know.
Pretty funny.
It might be true because there's actually Scientology has a lot of front groups, like things that look like one thing, but they're really to get people in Scientology.
Right, right.
They have a cafe. They have one of those in LA. One is a cafe and used bookstore. And somebody said they saw my book, $30 Film School, in that bookstore. Could be a coincidence, but yeah. So go to bigheadpress.com right now. Great stuff. Graphic novels, all available free. And the best ones are Roswell, Texas, and the other one, there's Quantum Vibe. The Probability Brooch at Roswell, Texas are my two favorites. They're written by L. Neil Smith, and they're illustrated by Scott Beezer. Thank you. I always get it wrong. Mm-hmm. Rhymes with geezer. That's how I remember it. He is a good friend of mine. He's donated, you know, to the Freedom Fiends before. He's been an advertiser on the Freedom Fiends before. Mm-hmm. He's a fan of Freedom Fiends. Yeah, yeah. And and on Free Talk Live, he's a friend of the family. I met him in person. Dig him. And he's also a good friend of Shulman's. Mm-hmm. And you know, he pointed out on a thread I had about this letter that people are more likely to give you money for what you're doing or going to do in the future than what you did years ago. So that's kind of the wrong approach. Although the biggest wrong approach, other than grumbling at people throughout this whole thing, is at the bottom where he has links to donate. They're like PayPal and credit cards. There's nothing for Bitcoin.
No Bitcoin.
You're asking libertarians for money and you don't take Bitcoin, dude.
You have the agorist.com website.
Yeah.
You should have to relinquish that. You should have to relinquish that right now.
Yes, I thought we were only saying nice things tonight.
We've had a citizen's court. This is tough love.
I never made any promises. Dude. Michael said he'd say nice things. I never said I'd say nice things.
That's true.
All right. So next sentence, and I have a comment on that.
And he says, my request for financial support during a life crisis when I can't pay my bills hasn't brought in a dime.
Okay. Last year, I had a life crisis of needing money for medical bills. For a really serious thing that came up really quickly, I got $3,000 or $4,000 in donations over about 6 months' time. So, why this guy's more popular than me? He has a crisis, asks for money, doesn't get a dime. I'm less popular, ask for money and get a bunch of money to help with my bills. What's the difference? Probably partially the way I ask, partially that I take Bitcoin, and partially that I'm really gracious for every penny people send me instead of like, which is how this comes off.
Yeah, but well, go on. And then he goes on to say, though, he must not be that popular because he says, I conclude I'm unpopular. I conclude I've been rejected. It's logical and not
Fame
all that
is
surprising.
A fickle bitch.
Yeah.
Well, good.
It really
See,
is.
He's coming to accept the terms already. Yeah. This is good.
But then he goes on to explain why he thinks it's not surprising. He says, I'm pro-gun and have written major newspaper and magazine op-eds and articles, books, and made two movies supporting the right to keep and bear arms. But because I'm not also an anti-abortion, pro-police, close the borders, cultural conservative, the Second Amendment activist won't support me.
Okay, that whole paragraph fits me, except for I haven't written for major newspaper. Actually, I've been on the cover of the San Francisco Examiner, so I have been written up in major newspapers. And I've made one movie supporting the right to keep and bear arms. And I'm not anti-abortion. I'm not pro-police. I'm not a close the borders cultural conservative. And the Second Amendment activists generally don't support me. So go on.
Because I've written in favor of regarding creative works as deserving property rights, I've pissed off most of the current anti-IP libertarian movement.
That's me. He's pissed me off with that.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
And then he says, because most libertarians are atheists, as I was into my 30s, then I talked about how I met God. I've generated intense hostility from libertarians and atheists, but my stating I now believe in God got me no support from any religious affiliation, since I say my change of mind came not from religion, scripture, or faith, but instead from direct experience.
Okay, we have at least two hardcore fans who are men of the cloth, and I'm discounting Ben Stone in this because he's a Quaker, which means you self-appoint it yourself, kind of. And he was a host on the show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but we have two hardcore fans. One is a minister with a really cool storefront church that's got a following. You know, he's a man of the cloth. And another one that we have is a Catholic priest at a big church. Like, I've seen pictures of it. Like, you know, you know, Oz, the architecture almost makes you fear, like that kind of church.
Oh,
it's so
good. Okay.
Yeah. So
cool.
He goes by Father ANCAP. That's his nickname.
Cool.
So,
who?
I'm a deist, but you know, we don't chase off the goddies.
Gotti. Yeah, you've got a few Gotties that are fiends too. So,
not
or a couple.
John Gotti, but we got some. Yeah. You're one of them, Jesus lovers.
And Randy.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, okay, so because I won't endorse the Johnson Weld ticket of the Libertarian Party, the LP supporters reject me.
Okay, and then he that's says, me. That's everyone on the show.
Yeah, because I've said I'm voting for Donald Trump despite my being in favor of open borders.
Yes.
Off the books workers and Edward Snowden, the Trump supporters don't like me.
He's
pretty much like turning everyone off.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Four murder dogs.
More murder dogs. I've got a fever. And the only prescription is
more murder dogs.
And that's not about murdering dogs. We love dogs. That is about pit bulls, commonly miscalled murder dogs. So,
and they're the sweetest. I met Cameron. I met the original, the OMD, original murder dog.
He's a homicide dog. He's
oh, she's so sweet. Cameron is the sweetest dog ever. Like she, I think she's even sweeter than my dog. Roxy's a little bit of a brat.
Okay, now moving right along because we got an agenda here. We got to get this done.
Okay.
I'm actually going to start with the thrilling conclusion in case we get cut off by
that damn
free market. So here are my two suggestions to J. Neal, quote, murder dog, unquote, Shulman. Is that a nickname?
No.
That could be, okay. I suppose.
All right. So here are my two recommendations to him. One, I think he's resting on his laurels. I'm going to jump to the list of people he says like his work, and I believe him. Note that at least half the people on this list are either in prison or dead. So they can't really, you know, you can't rest on what you did decades ago.
Right.
Not saying he hasn't done things since then, but I kind of feel like even the attitude of like, I want people to pay me for having contributed. No, that's not what people contribute money for. That's what you get a lifetime achievement award for.
Right. Yeah. What have you done lately?
What have you done today? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, I tell every libertarian, don't quit your day job. All of the fiends, all 15 of the co-hosts on the show have jobs. I mean, it might be work at home jobs doing piecemeal for other people like me, but I do work and I make money and I don't try to support myself with my libertarian media. None of us do. I take donations for the show to cover the expenses, and I did take donations last year for a health issue and got them, and they all went, I mean, they were gone as soon as they came in, to doctor bills, which we're still paying off. But we're not underwater with it like we were. So thank you everyone for helping. And the other thing is, like, I think this guy needs to be more appreciative of things people do for him and less like I give up. No one likes me. I'm not getting money in the mail free.
Right.
And he should take Bitcoin. Okay. So jump to the part where he read the list.
Oh yeah.
Because it starts pretty soon, of people who, libertarians are like fish out of water to both liberals and conservatives, but despite having won praise for my libertarian writing from, and this is a long sentence with a list, and then it says at the end, I'm a fish out of water even to libertarians like Lou Rockwell, Jeffrey Tucker, and John Stossel. It would have been so simple to be more popular. All I had to do was leave my mind behind. So read this incredible list, and I believe this, that these people like him.
Okay, so the list is Milton Friedman, Anthony Burgess. Is it Burgess or Burgess? Burgess, whatever. Charlton Heston, Robert A. Heinlein.
And some of these are like Milton Friedman is a famous libertarian economist, but Anthony Burgess is the author of Clockwork Orange. Charlton Heston is a famous actor. He was in Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Robert Heinlein. Famous writer. Libertarian and famous sci-fi writer.
Yep. L. Neil Smith, Robert
famous
Anton Wilson.
Sci-fi writer.
Yep. Another
really famous anarchist sci-fi and weird writer.
Yep. F. Paul Wilson. Wilson. Powell Anderson.
Colin Wilson. Oh, these are all writers. I think Colin Wilson was like somebody in the band Men at Work, but I don't think that's who he means.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then Powell, I think it's the pronounced of Powell.
These are all writers.
Anderson, Jerry Purnell, Larry Niven.
The actor, yeah.
Well, is that David Niven? Larry Niven?
Maybe. You're right.
Anyway, Gregory Benford, David Brin, Nathaniel Brandon, Ron Paul, Thomas S.
Ron Paul, most famous libertarian ever, probably.
Yeah,
Saz. Grover Norquist.
Grover Norquist,
libertarian, the Dread Pot. Minarchist Republican.
Yeah, basically, Ross Ulbricht, he said, calls in the Dread Pirate Roberts, Jeff Riggenbach.
First, Silk Road, Dread Pirate Roberts may not know we exist, but his mom's been on the show a bunch.
Yeah.
Jeff Riggenbach, famous old school libertarian, famous libertarian.
Yeah, Walter Block, Carrie Pearson, Diane Peterson, Doug Casey.
Famous libertarian economist and rich guy.
Yeah.
Is he the guy that's in prison or is that his son?
No, he's the one.
He's the one in prison.
Okay. Yeah. Winnie McElroy, Glenn Beck, Alex Jones, Michael Medved, Walter Williams, Piers Anthony is a science fiction writer that my mom loved. Actually more fantasy.
Samuel Edward Konkin III, who created the term agorism in the theory.
Yeah.
And prominent others, and Brad Linweaver. Don't know who that is. But yeah, so don't quit your day job. Get a day job. You have to. There's so much free libertarian content. Nobody wants to pay for it.
Yeah, and then, I mean, just him saying all he would have had to have done is leave behind his mind. Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't do that make a little money.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's just, the whole thing was obnoxious, just the way he went about asking for it.